I'm Bob Oates. This is The Connection. After all the hype and controversy, last night's Grammy Awards have once again shown that in an industry built for teenagers and 20-somethings, a touch of gray goes a long way. It's a beautiful day. It was a beautiful night for the Irish superstars U2 as the group took home three Grammys last night, two for their smash song Beautiful Day. Other big winners were 30-year rock veteran Steely Dan and country crossover Faith Hill. The 43rd annual Grammy Awards were probably the most anticipated, most controversial, and most hyped in recent years. But the most talked about event last night didn't come from an obnoxious rapper or a drunken rock star or a political folky, but from Recording Academy president Michael Green, who walked a tightrope in a tentative support of angry rap performer Eminem, dubbing him a sort of modern-day Elvis. Connection listeners, what did last night's Grammys tell us about the state of pop music? Are you ready for the new sounds and styles of Eminem, Kid Rock, and Beck? Is the industry? 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Join the conversation or go online at theconnection.org. We're joined in the studio today by Matt Asher, music editor of the Boston Phoenix, and Jay Sweet, music supervisor at the Planetary Group, a national artist development and production company. Welcome, Matt Asher and Jay Sweet. Thanks for coming to the Connection Studios.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here.
Let's start, Matt, with you. Give us what you think the headline is out of last night's awards.
Well, I think it's pretty common with the Grammys. I think it was a pretty resounding anticlimax after all the buildup. I mean, I think the buildup to it was a lot more interesting than the show itself.
How so?
Well, I think it's right to say that this was the most sort of controversial Grammys. Eminem's sort of performance and his inclusion in the Grammys, the buildup to that raised a lot of controversy, and it was very interesting. I mean, just this last Sunday, the New York Times had not one, not two, but three pieces about Eminem, which is pretty uncommon. But when the show rolled actually started and as it progressed, it was a pretty normal Grammys. You know, there wasn't really anything too exciting about it. I mean, it's mostly people just getting up, accepting awards, a host looking like he wasn't quite sure when the camera was about to come back on him, and you know, some performances that were so sort of scripted that they didn't. You know, there wasn't a huge element of excitement to them. I mean, I think that the anticipation was definitely greater than the actual event.
Was there a standout event performance for you last night?
Well, I thought the Sheryl Crow Shelby Lynn duet was really nice. I thought that the Moby with the Blue Man Group was interesting. It was kind of a mess, a little too much going on, but I thought it was pretty cool. And you know, I mean, it was certainly interesting to see how Eminem handled himself and to see the Eminem-Elton John duet and to see sort of the kind of mixed messages, I think, that Eminem sort of tried to project. I believe when he accepted his first award, he thanked people who were able to sort of put aside the controversy and see his record for what it was and what it wasn't. Of course, he didn't really elaborate on that at all, so it wasn't really clear what he was saying. And then he embraced Elton John, but he also flipped off the audience. He raised his middle finger in a salute. So it wasn't really clear, you know, what he was trying to say, but it was interesting.
Jay Sweet, what was it for you last night?
I'd have to agree with Matt and say that the Shelby Lynn thing was above and beyond the best musical. I thought it was really raw and stripped down, and musically that was the highlight, I think. I think the Blue Man Group with the Moby was really cinematic and had a lot of ta-da.
Terrific visuals,
Exactly, a lot of visuals. A lot of scantily dressed people, I think, which is now becoming the norm, which... I think it's, you know, they maybe should have Joan Rivers and Melissa Rivers out front of the Grammys next year. I think that's more appropriate. I think there were more questions about Eminem and fashion than there were about music.
Well, if you watch the E! Network, the build-up, they do have Joan Rivers out there talking to everybody about their fashion, which is kind of nice. Yeah. That was actually more fun for me to watch than the actual Grammys.
Well, luckily I thought they had, you know, the expert on music, Tony Danza, really working the crowd early, which... Mm-hmm. I thought was a. I think you'd think VH1 and the people who were broadcasting could have found somebody who knew a little bit more about music, but.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, tell us what you thought about the Grammy Awards last night. What jazzed you up about what you saw, or did anything you took in last night disturb you? Did it make you feel squirmy a little bit? Let's hear a little bit of Steely Dan.
Big rigs. Now I come back home to plan my next move from the comfort of my Envy's couch. When I see my little cousin Janine walk in, well, all I could say was, ouch. Honey, how you've grown like a rose. Well, we used to play when we were three. How about a kiss on your cousin Dupree? How about a kiss on your cousin Dupree?
Cousin Dupree by Steely Dan. You know, it was as you said right at the top, almost an anticlimax right at the end when Album of the Year was awarded, and it was almost predicted. I think it could have been predicted, Steely Dan.
Well, you know, I think that they even looked a little embarrassed to be accepting the award, but yeah, you know, the Grammys tend to like safer artists, and certainly artists who have been around for a long time. And so I think it really wasn't a big surprise that Steely Dan did so well, even though their record, I don't even think that the record that they put out last year sold a million copies, as opposed to Eminem, who sold 8 million copies of his record. So commercially, it certainly didn't do all that well. But
in some ways, that's a good thing, right? Because you could argue then that the people who cast the ballots are recognizing artistry instead of the commercialism.
Well, I think that's the important thing to understand about the Grammys is they're not the People's Choice Awards. This is not an award show where the most commercially successful artists win all the awards. On the other hand, it's not a critics' poll either. It's not just sort of the critics' picks that win. It's somewhere in between. This is the industry itself sort of voting on the artists that they'd like to see represent the industry. And a group like Steely Dan, I think because they've been around for so long and because they're somewhat sophisticated musically and because, you know, in a lot of ways they're quite safe. At this point, although I don't think that's always been true of them, are a real easy pick, for the people who are voting for the Grammys. Plus, you know, everybody who's voting on the Grammys knows who they are, and that's I think a real big advantage.
You know, Jay Sweet, is it safe to vote gray? Is that why we've had Santana and Steely Dan over the last couple of years?
I think that is definitely a part of it. I feel that I think U2's Beautiful Day is a perfect example, which you started the top show. I think that shows it was the most accessible, I think, of all the acts. I think that's why they kind of had the big ones. I think it's the most accessible. And when you're looking at who votes for the Grammys, you have to look at you have young, old, and I think U2 falls right in that gray matter.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, tell us about the Grammys last night. Tell us about what you heard, what you liked, what you didn't like. Let's go to the phones. Pete, you're speaking to the Connection. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, this is Pete from Somerville. I got a question for Jay Sweet. Not really a question, just more of a discussion point.
Go right ahead.
So disappointed lately with the pop music situation and all the girls dressing the same and sounding the same and looking the same. It's just everything's so generic to me. I want to just talk about the evolution of pop music and what you guys think about this latest Grammys.
Jay?
Thanks for calling, Pete. I think you have an excellent point. I think the spectrum has been widened. I think what you're seeing now is Eminem just going so far one way and the Britney Spears, Christina, whole thing going the other way. And that's why, once again, I think songs like the Sheryl Crow, Shelby Lynn, and the U2, which kind of is so accessible and appeals to, you know, if you like the girl thing, you're still going to like Sheryl Crow and Shelby Lynn, who is dressed just as scantily, if not more, than Christina. But at the same time, I think that side, the scantily clad little teeny bop stuff, is actually helping the middle, so to speak, because if one side of the spectrum goes so far into that produced bubblegum, you know, pop stuff, and then you have Eminem pushing the barrier on the other side, it just means that the middle is actually going to be better.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think it's also, I mean, I think it's also important to note that Britney, NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys, and Christina Aguilera, except for the Latin
all
award,
shut out.
They were all shut out of the Grammys last night.
Why do you think that was?
You know, I don't think that they've been around long enough. I don't think that they have the sort of stature that the Grammys, the people who are voting for the Grammys, like to sort of used to represent what the music business is about. And I mean, I'm thinking back now beyond last year to 2 years ago when Alanis Morissette, I think, did very well. But one, and which, you know, which in a way was kind of noteworthy. She's a somewhat edgy artist, at least by Grammy standards. But on the other hand, if you, you know, take a look at her, she's, you know, she's really quite traditional in being a female singer-songwriter. And the fact that Glenn Ballard, who is, you know, as industry as you get, co-wrote her songs and produced her records, you know, sort of put her, I think, in very, very, very good with the Grammy people. And so that's the kind of thing that they like.
But are we already tiring of the style? I mean, you can't go into a supermarket without seeing Britney or Christina or NSYNC on the cover of something. And you can't turn on the TV without seeing their images. Do you think we're tiring of that already?
I agree. I feel like as a consumer and as a civilian, I'm just bombarded by these girls in bras and underwear.
Well, let's get to the root of that. It's marketability.
Sex sells.
You can, well, yeah, sex and innocence.
For a certain demographic.
Right, but sex and innocence and you know, it, the pop, it all, it's all marketable. Whereas someone like Eminem is so not marketable, and I think,
well, he did pretty well.
Yeah, no, but no, of course he's done well. I mean, marketing himself and his own album. Of course, yeah. he's a genius, and well, actually, Dr. Dre is really a genius, and the people at Interscope. But what I do think is you don't see, because you can't with the content of his lyrics, you don't see Eminem's face on a Big Mac commercial.
Yeah,
we're talking about the state of the Grammys, the state of pop music today in the wake of the elevation last night of the artist some consider to be hate rapper, Eminem, to a certain status last night. He picked up 3 Grammys. We'll take more calls after the break at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Pete, thanks for your call. We'll speak to more Connection listeners coming up. You're listening to The Connection from WBUR Boston and NPR.
Well, if I am a dog, the party is on. I gotta get my groove, got my mind I'm gone. Do you see the race coming from my eye? Walking through the prison, Digimon is breaking them down. Me and my white socks, short, chill, and gancy color. Any caliber, do I think I knew, that's why they call me Pitbull. Cause I'm the man of the land, when they see me, they say, ooh.
Who let the dogs out? 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 Who let the dogs out?
This is the best dance song by Baha Men, Who Let the Dogs Out. We'll be back on The Connection.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Newtonville Books, presenting NOP author...
People are mad, and people are talking, and that's a good thing, because it's through dialogue and debate that social discovery and progress can occur. Listen, music has always been the voice of rebellion. It's a mirror of our culture, sometimes reflecting a dark and disturbing underbelly, obscured from the view of most people of privilege. A militarized zone which is chronicled by the CNN of the inner city, rap and hip-hop music.
We're gonna have a problem here. Y'all act like you never seen a white person before. Jaws all on the floor like Pam, like Tommy just burst in the door. And started whooping her ass worse than before. They first were divorced, sewing her over furniture. It's the return of the... Oh, wait, no, wait, you're kidding. He didn't just
Real Slim Shady, Eminem last night at the Grammys. Let's talk a little bit about Michael Green and what Michael Green had to say with our guests in the studio this hour as we talk about the Grammys. Matt Asher, music editor at the Boston Phoenix, and Jay Sweet, music supervisor for the Planetary Group, National Artist Development and Production Company. Michael Green also said, when he was talking about the controversy over Extreme lyrics, he described it as a heat-seeking missile. Why so now? Why is the controversy heating up now?
Well, I think because Eminem is so visible now, and because he's been conferred the respectability of the Grammys, and I think that upset a lot of people. And there were certainly a lot of platitudes in what Green had to say, but I think he made one really good point, which is as relates to Eminem, which is that with Eminem the difficult lyrics, the homophobia, the misogyny is really right up front, and it's hard to miss. There's nothing, it's not hidden beneath the surface at all. And there's plenty of stuff in our media culture that has sort of undertones of racism or sexism or homophobia, but that is, it's so sort of veiled that, you know, nobody really sort of picks up on it or talks about it or anything. And the nice thing about Eminem is it's so out in the open that it really has generated a lot of dialogue or at least a lot of discussion.
Jay Sweet, you agree with that?
I agree wholeheartedly. I actually think Eminem, what Michael Green was referring to is that Eminem is an artist, and like all good art, he has brought a discussion to the forefront through his medium, and I believe that Michael Green was just saying that's what we're honoring here today.
I don't know that was necessarily Eminem's intention. I mean, I don't think that I don't want to seem like I'm saying that he's some great social revolutionary who had this all planned in advance.
I'm not either.
I want to definitely make sure that doesn't come across. But that has been the impact of what he's done with this record and the success that he's had with the record is that people are talking about this stuff.
And I think that's what Michael Green was. That's what I said was more. Michael Green was the one who was trying to bring this, use Eminem as an example of art that brings a message to the forefront.
Connection listeners, weigh in. 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Matt Asher, do you think that Eminem is trying to shock the public or shock the critics?
Well, I think Eminem is trying to shock people. That's pretty much, you know, I mean, there's a tradition of that in hip-hop. There's a tradition of that in rock and roll. I think that Elton John feels that he comes out of that tradition. You know, in some ways, it's really very similar to, you know, the kids on a playground trying to impress other kids on the playground by saying the most shocking thing that you can think of. And I think that's really part of what Eminem is all about. I also think that there is a fair amount of very real sort of social anger in his lyrics. I don't think that he just dreamed his lyrics up out of the blue. But I do think that they're definitely intended to shock people.
From the standpoint, Jay Sweet, of trying to sell records or trying to say something that you mean?
I think sell records. I think he's trying to sell records. And to quote not Michael Green, but actually Melissa Etheridge, who Michael Green actually quoted her by saying that I think he's a mirror of society. I think he's just, I don't think he's trying to say anything new with his music. I think he's just trying to say it as plainly and as straight out there as he can, like which Matt said earlier.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to add that you know, I think it probably is valuable, particularly for parents who realize that their kids are listening to somebody like Eminem, to realize that this is the kind of talk that goes on at playgrounds and in locker rooms and to deal with it in some way. I don't know what the right way of dealing with that is, but this is a very real thing, and in some ways, Eminem really is a reflection of how people talk.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255.
I'ma name her Bonnie. I read about your Uncle Ronnie too, I'm sorry. I had a friend kill himself over some bitch who didn't want him. I know you probably hear this every day, but I'm your biggest fan. I even got the underground stuff that you did with Scam. I got a room full of your posters and your pictures, man. I like the stuff you did with Rock and Ooh, that shit was fat. Anyways, I hope you get this, man. Hit me back to the chat. Truly yours, your biggest fan. This is Stan.
But Jesus got him cold and wondering why at all. The morning rain clapped up my window. Oh, I can't see it all.
Elton John and Eminem doing Stan last night, the rap Stan, at the Grammy performance. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-423-TALK. 1-800-423-8255. Mary, you're on The Connection. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I really reject this characterization of Eminem as some kind of social rebel or revolutionary because, frankly, I don't think beating up on people in your lyrics like women and gays who have less power than you do as a white man really represents any kind of progress of anything. I think what Eminem represents is white males who feel really threatened that their privilege is being encroached on, and that's the anger that you're hearing. I don't think that, you know, talking about beating up women, killing women, you know, profaning the lives of gays is doing anything other than telling us that we belong back under, you know, underground, under the heel of men like Eminem who can't deal with the revolution that really did happen in the 60s and 70s. So I'm disgusted when people, you know, he has a right to say what he wants, but I'm disgusted to hear him characterized as some kind of rebel. He and George Bush, as far as I'm concerned, have the same political stripe.
Don't go away. Stay on the line. I want to get our guest in the studio here to comment on this. Matt?
Well, I mean, that's why I was really trying to make a distinction between what the impact of Eminem is in terms of the amount of dialogue that's gone on about this stuff and what he's actually doing or what his intentions may be. I don't think that he, you know, he's trying to be any kind of social revolutionary or social rebel. I really wouldn't want to credit him with that. But I think it's hard to deny that the impact of this album has actually been to sort of raise the to create conversations about this kind of stuff. And too often I think we don't deal with this stuff at all.
Jay Sweet, wait, hang on, Mary.
Mary, I appreciate the point. I have to agree completely with Matt on this. Is I think that, like I said, it's hey, you're calling in on a talk show to talk about this, and it's a great issue. And if we weren't talking about this, you know, if it didn't cause so much anger for you to pick up the phone and call, then you know that would be a loss. I think this is a good thing.
Mary,
right? Well, you know, I'm an educator. I'm going right now in my car to pick up a transgender speaker for Bentley College today who's going to come out and try to educate us about transgender issues. And I can also say I'm really upset and appalled that, you know, that the duet happened with Elton John.
Well, that's actually the question I wanted to ask you. How did you feel about Elton John before last night's performance, and how do you feel about Elton John today?
I think he's lost his mind. I mean, I always thought of Elton John as somebody who stood in solidarity with gay people, of whom he was one, and for him to hold up Eminem's hand like he's the new victor and to do this duet with him says to me that people have lost their minds about what really causes gay bashing and violence. I mean, I don't get it, I don't understand it, and I'm horrified that Elton John did it.
Jay Sweet.
Okay, I see that point, but I also have to think, do you remember when Elton came out himself? It was a very big deal.
The
right wing at that time really didn't like it and spoke out really strongly against it and criticized it to no end. And I think you have to look, and I don't want to get into a huge philosophical debate about the First Amendment, but, you know, what we're talking about here is the right to free speech and the right to say what you want to say and to not be censored.
I also think you have to realize that I really do think that Eminem had a lot more to lose in that duet than Elton John did.
I have to agree completely.
I mean, you know, Eminem's sort of whole persona is based on this kind of street credibility or whatever, this phony sort of street credibility that he may or may not have. And that really was threatened by him appearing with Elton John.
Someone who's completely mainstream.
And hugging Elton
John. And not only that, yeah, exactly. I mean, I, you know, and so I think that to a large degree, the way Eminem sort of acted on the Grammys last night and the fact that he was able to sort of participate in the way that he did, I think really diffused his sort of volatility, if you will, a lot. And I think that he really did have a lot more to lose than somebody like Elton John.
Do you think at the end of the evening when he flipped the audience in the Staples Center and the TV audience at home, the bird, that he realized that and that he needed to market his image?
Oh, I think he realized that he better do something like that. I thought it was a pretty weak gesture, but...
especially since he knew it wasn't going to get seen.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know...
And it was an awkward moment. I mean, that was an awkward embrace at the end of that performance. Didn't you feel that way?
Well, I think that most of the performances at the Grammys are pretty awkward and staged. I don't think anybody looks terribly comfortable. So I don't even know if you could really sort of say that that was the result of anything other than the fact that things are so staged and that things are just inherently awkward at the Grammys.
And you need to do something with your hands during the performance.
You do.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Mary, thank you so much for your call. Joe is now calling from Cincinnati, Ohio. Joe, hi, you're on The Connection.
Hi. I've been listening to your guest there, and I know they both qualified their statements that Eminem was not any kind of... social reformer or anything, that he didn't really plan to be the impetus for the discussion, but they're both very glad that the discussion is taking place. The only problem I have is that the discussion seems to be about marketability and controversy. It's not about homophobia. It's not about misogyny. It's not about violence. It seems to be, the discussion seems to be elsewhere and about the real issues that he's supposedly singing about.
Jay, you want to go on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you think this is bad, what Eminem is singing about, I suggest you go into a local record store, a smaller chain, a mom-and-pop store, and go buy some real early and I mean, go listen to a Richard Pryor album and tell me what you think. I mean, he talks about stuff that's three times as worse as an Eminem, and I think if you listen to a lot of inner city hip-hop albums and rap albums, you'll find that this has been going on. It's just that this one has sold 8 million.
Oh, sure. I agree that this is nothing new. And the fact that Steely Dan got a Grammy for their song, Uncle Whatever There, it's the same kind of controversial issue. And I don't propose that we censor anybody. I'm a musician and a songwriter wannabe myself, so I wouldn't want to put any kind of restrictions. I'm a little disappointed that the industry has celebrated this artist to the degree that they have. But still, I find the discussion is not really about the social issues themselves. They're about Eminem and how he is so popular. It just doesn't seem to be getting to the root of the issue.
I agree with that. And I think that what really freaks people out about Eminem is the fact that he's a cartoon, and as a cartoon, he really appeals to young kids. And the fact is, I don't know that anybody's really ever come up with a good way to figure out how to explain to kids the difference between reality and fantasy. And so ultimately, what we're dealing with, number one, is these issues which, you know, we're supposed to, as civilized people, have gotten over, things like misogyny and homophobia, and yet they're still, you know, very much a part of our culture. They're undercurrents in our culture that don't, you know, that we try very hard not to let surface too often. But that doesn't mean that we've really come up with solutions to them. And so maybe that's why the level, you're not happy with the level of dialogue, because maybe you're not hearing solutions. But, you know, this is one of the prices you pay for living in a society where there's a free exchange of ideas, is that you're not going to like some of those ideas and you're going to have to figure out ways to deal with them. We really just haven't yet.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. This is The Connection from NPR. Joe, thanks for your call. Let's go back to the phones now. Carla, you're on the line. Carla, of course you know you're on the line. You're now on The Connection.
Hello. I just have a question about, what do you think about the performance quality of music? I mean, actors on film and stage take a part. And while music has developed this very personal quality of performance, there is still the possibility that musical performers are actors taking the stage. And I just wanted to hear the guests' comments on that.
Well, that's the difference, I think, between that's the reason that people aren't offended by Steely Dan, because they look at Steely Dan and they see that what they're singing about, even if what they're singing about may be statutory rape or something in most states, they see it as a fiction, and they look at Steely Dan as songwriters, people who are writing, you know, fictions into songs, and that's very different from who these two people really are. With Eminem, I think that there's a big confusion. Nobody's really sure, you know, are these Eminem's real feelings in Stan, or is he acting out a role? I think actually the performance at the Grammys tried to sort of frame it as him acting out a role. There's that point where he's sort of sitting behind a desk, and I think that the sort of inevitable sort of idea there is that he's a writer and he's sort of writing a fiction and he's playing a character. But I do know what you mean.
Jay Sweet?
I think, Carl, I'm trying to get back to exactly what you were trying to say, is I think that it's MTV. I mean, I think the minute you had MTV showing that, okay, not only is the music going to market itself, but the whatever it is, the face that you're going to give it to, the visual image. And I think, you know, look at Jennifer Lopez, you know, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears. Would they sell as many records if you didn't get to look at them?
Has video killed the live performance?
I'd say not the live performance, but I'd say and I hate to use the word, it's sounding kind of trite, but marketing of it, I think, is now more, I mean, like, when we started off the show, I said I felt it was more about fashion. The question seemed to be oriented more about the fashion of what they were wearing than what they were singing about. And Shelby Lynn said it fairly eloquently when she said, tonight I'm just here about the music, and that's it. Not about anything else. Whether she really meant it or not, I thought the sentiment was there. Of course, she was scantily, yeah, exactly. But I thought, at least when given a chance in front of a big camera that's going to millions of people, she said, I don't give a you-know-what about this. It's all about the music.
Carla, thank you so much for your call. More Connection listeners after the break at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going into the break with a song called The National Anthem by Radiohead, whose album Kid A won Best Alternative Album. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Relax the Back, offering new ways to communities at Allaire.com.
I'm Bob Oakes. This is The Connection.
Black light blue. Heaven's perfect hue, the ultimate possession, the game you couldn't lose, the voice in the corner, the song you heard anew, the terrible admission. Some tragic lonely tune.
Black Light Blue by Shelby Lynn. Best new artist, Grammy winner last night. Connection listeners, did you flirt with the late night clock last night because you were up watching the Grammys? The Grammys and pop music are our topics this hour on The Connection. Our guests in the studio, Jay Sweet, music supervisor for the Planetary Group, National Artist Development and Production Company, and Matt Asher, music editor of the Boston Phoenix. And let's talk, Matt, right off the top about the song we're listening to right now and the artist we're listening to, Shelby Lynn.
Shelby Lynn, yeah. She's been around for, what, 10 or 12 years? This was her sixth album, and she was up for Best New Artist.
At least she won.
She did win, and you know, in a way, that's very impressive. She won over, you know, some people who were much more successful than her over the last year. It was certainly, in fact, a lot of people have called her record a bit of a disappointment commercially. It didn't necessarily do all that well, and yet it's just such a great reflection of what the Grammys consider new. I think that that says a lot about where the Grammys are at. You have to realize that this is, you know, what's new to the Grammys is not necessarily what's new to music. It takes the Grammys a little while to catch on.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, join the conversation. So how do you define new? An artist who's been around for more than a decade, who's got six albums out?
Well, they hadn't heard of her before.
And this is what I was talking about earlier about the gray matter, about if you keep widening the spectrums, the stuff in the middle, you're going to have a better selection and a bigger selection of which to choose from and which to honor and celebrate. And we went out on the break last time with Kid A and Radiohead's national anthem, and I think right there that's a group that, I mean, I can't imagine. What I do think is the main, like U2, which I find in that kind of gray, accessible place, they have to give, you know, their props, quote unquote, to Radiohead. That gives them credibility. It says we like to listen to this side too. I mean, although our songs are kind of middle of the road, We listen to this great stuff, and you should too. And I think that's the greatest thing about the Grammys is actually when artists get up and talk about their influences and what they're listening to and what else people should be listening to.
Does that happen?
Thank God that Bono actually did do that. He actually said, you know,
give us what you think then is the pop headline on the state of pop.
On the state of pop. Well, I think that as it's reflected in the Grammys, at least, it's that it's very fragmented. There is no, I mean, the concept of there being one mainstream at this point is kind of ridiculous. There just isn't. When you have 8 million people buying an Eminem record, and then you have, you know, huge numbers of people like buying records by Faith Hill, for example. That's really two distinct mainstreams. There isn't one state of pop, really. And as a result, I think that as a result, we do that may be one of the reasons why we see so many sort of seemingly empty pop phenoms like Britney Spears and NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys, because literally they appeal to a lowest common denominator.
Let's listen to a little bit of Faith Hill. Here's the record, Breathe.
I can feel the magic floating in the air. Being with you gets me that way. I watch the sunlight dance across your face, and I've never been this swept away.
The song Breathe by Faith Hill, best female country vocal collaboration and album. Jay Sweet, why is, beyond the fact that she's got a great voice and she's beautiful, why is she so popular at the moment?
Other than those two reasons?
Because she has a great voice and she's beautiful,
I
think.
Let's see, other than that, let me count the ways. No, I, you know, she too has, quote, paid her dues, not to mention she's married to somebody who's quite famous as well. That doesn't hurt. But, I think I want to go back to what Matt was saying about how music is becoming fragmented. And if there's going to be one big country person, it's probably going to be the one that's the most, once again, accessible. Someone that's
safe.
Safe. Everybody can listen to it. It's not, you know, Garth Brooks, The Thunder Road, or you know, it's something that's, you know, who also sold millions. But I find that what I thought was ridiculous about the Grammys is the fact that it's taking on this. There were eight categories for gospel. And I'm talking about best heavy metal gospel record of the year. I mean, talking about fragmenting, the Grammys aren't really pulling together everybody. I think they're actually helping to fragment it by giving out categories, all over the place. I think this year it was Native Americans. That was the big one they wanted to highlight. You know, in the years past, it had been the Latin Grammys. And now they said, okay, we've got the Latin Grammys and we've plugged that. Now we're going to plug the Native Americans. And I think it's an attempt to reach out and try to listen to get people to listen to new music. But I think that in the end, more and more with the internet and with this and that, I feel that independent records and smaller record labels are really getting a chance to get some stuff out there, and I like.
Not at the Grammys.
Not at the Grammys, but at least albums that that you wouldn't think would even get mentioned are.
Connection listeners, is pop music all too packaged and slick today? Or is it as good and groovy and far out as it ever was? 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Why so fragmented, Matt? Is it all cynically? Is it all marketing?
Well, I don't think it's all marketing. I think what happened, I mean, I think it's a process that I think music, a lot of music anyway, tends to evolve very organically. And then as soon as it finds an audience, the marketers take over, and it gets a label, and it gets packaged. And, you know, but I think that people who, you know, people are smarter than I think sometimes marketers give them credit for. And people, you know, they find the music that they like. And sometimes they're very happy with packaged music, and sometimes they want to look beyond that.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. The question I was asking is that why are the Grammys so fragmented? Because people find this new music. The record companies recognize that 10, 12, 100, 200,000 people are suddenly buying it. So if we create a category and we nominate a bunch of these records, we can boost the sales.
I think that that's true. I think it's also just the fact that there was so much criticism of the Grammys over the years for not incorporating new music. You have to realize the Grammys started in 1958. That was the first year. Rock and roll, the original rock and roll, was just at its, you know, really peaking at that point. And the first Grammys included no nominations for any rock and roll artists. Elvis Presley wasn't nominated for anything. You know, it was basically the traditional sort of pop crooners who got, and that's sort of the legacy of the Grammys. That's where they started.
And they've been making up for it ever since.
They've been trying to, but it's been a slow, slow process. You know, incorporating hip-hop, incorporating things like heavy metal and hard rock, incorporating in the early 90s alternative music. You know, I think Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters, I think they won for Best Rock Album. Is that correct?
Album.
Yeah, Best Rock Album. And he didn't even really seem to be sure what that meant.
He thought it was a really cool title.
Yeah, he thought it was a cool title. Which I think, you know, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to be as inclusive as possible. And let's face it, if you put sort of, you know, if you put most hip-hop artists up against, you know, Paul Simon and Sting in the Best Song category, they're not going to win, you know? They're just not. And so if you put them, even looking this year, Eminem won 3 Grammys. They were all in rap hip-hop categories. He did not win 1 Grammy outside of a rap hip-hop category.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Back to Connection listeners. Dave, you're on the line. Thanks for calling The Connection.
Yeah, hi. I've always been a fan of Alison Krauss and a few other round-around people that just never get play on the radio. And she's won, I think, 10 Grammys, but, you know, it just never translates into anything anywhere but a little bit of distribution here and there. I was just wondering if I could have a comment on, you know, what it would take to get some of the better music being made by different artists listened to on the radio.
Jay?
Dave, do you like Bela Fleck as well?
Yeah.
He won 2 Grammys last night, which should help. And why that should help is when you go to your Borders or your Barnes & Noble and they have that thing above, they're going to say Grammy winners. And at least they're going to have some Bela Fleck, which is in that same bluegrass and, you know, just some good music. I think it's the greatest music.
Doesn't it translate into play?
Because people don't buy those records.
Why?
It's not the music they want to listen to.
Can I just make one more comment?
Sure, go ahead, Dave.
Well, like Alison Krauss is a good example. I mean, she gets all the way, she debuts at the top 4 spot every time she comes out and stays on the charts for, I think, 3-4 months the last time. But it's just her loyal listeners. And we barrage the radio stations and they say that no one wants to hear it.
But part of it is it's on that chart, and that chart is one of many charts.
Well, it's the country music chart, and we're calling country music stations.
Dave, where are you calling from?
Newfields, New Hampshire.
Exactly. If you take a trip down to the Smoky Mountains and you turn on the radio station, I bet you'll hear a lot of Alison Krauss.
There are alternative country stations that do play that kind of music.
Exactly.
1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Thanks for your call. This is The Connection from NPR. Let's go back to the phones now. Betsy's on the line. Betsy, thanks for calling The Connection.
Listen, I was watching the Grammys last night, and the thing that affected me the most was just that pretty much every female artist that got up there looked like a fashion model. And, you know, it just makes me really sad that there's so many good female artists who are, you know, so talented with their music, and that has to be a part of it. I mean, I think the only one that had any clothes on was Sheryl Crow.
Well, what about Macy Gray?
Jill Scott?
Macy, you know, I loved Macy Gray's style, and even last night I thought she looked like more done up than usual. You know, Macy Gray in her jeans and t-shirt and her crazy hair, I mean, that was what was great about her. And even last night, I thought she didn't even look comfortable in her big frock, and, you know.
Yeah, did you see her frock get caught in the seat when she had to go?
I did, and that was beautiful Macy Gray. I mean, it was, but it just, I don't know if it's the Jennifer Lopez trend or what, and I'm really not a conservative person, but I'm just so sick of, like, every female artist. As a woman, you get used to it with fashion models, but for it to cross over so much into the music industry where you're just standing there looking at everyone's boobs, and it's just like, come on, you guys. You're talented. You don't need to, you know, I don't know. It just, it's, you just get really sick of it as a woman, I think.
Betsy, thanks so much for your
sure.
call.
Okay.
Jay, you want to comment on that?
No, I just thought Jill Scott, also, who sang with Moby, in case you missed that, but, you know, she looked fantastic. And I think I agree with your point. I really do. But I also think you have to look at, you know, it is them dressing up.
It's
and it's
the
a
Grammys.
Big night. It's a big night. You'd wear a tuxedo to your prom or, you know.
And Matt Asher, last word.
Yeah, it's the Grammys. I mean, that's, you know, of course people are going to get dressed up. I mean, everybody wants to make a statement. They want to look good.
Matt Asher, music editor for the Boston Phoenix, thanks so much for coming in and spending the hour with us on The Connection.
Thanks for having me.
Same to you, Jay Sweet, music supervisor for the Planetary Group, a national artist development and production company. Thanks to you.
Thanks, everybody.
We're closing the show this morning with I Try by Macy Gray, who won the Best Female Pop Vocal last night. I'm Bob Oakes. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners.